Hello, folks. This is attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere show. Always trying to move Wisconsin forward. Today, I am privileged to have Jay Heck from Common Cause with us to tell us the latest about what's happening in the elections coming up. So how you doing, Jay?
I'm good. Good to see you again, Mark. Or my favorite, Paul Revere.
There you go. So, Eric, before we jump into things, remind folks a little bit about what Common Cause is and what your role is.
Sure. I've had the privilege of being the director of Common Cause Wisconsin for the last 28 years, and we are the state's largest nonpartisan citizens political reform advocacy organization. We support voting rights, fair voting maps, less money in politics. We don't endorse candidates, but we do endorse good, clean government and accountable legislators.
So we're coming up on election August 13th. Primaries that are going to make a difference. We've got really, really competitive races. And we're sitting now looking at, I think you told me there are 90 state legislative candidates on the August 13th primary ballot that have actually pledged to support nonpartisan redistricting reform in 2025. So I want to spend a little bit of time about that topic. Just briefly, though, can you give us a background on why these primaries in these redistricts make such a big difference? And how do these new maps look? In other words, how do they divide up the state?
Sure, because I know your listeners are very smart and informed. They probably already know that for the last 13 years, Wisconsin had amongst the most gerrymandered, and by that I mean the most politically unfair, skewed maps in the United States. They were drawn by a very partisan Republican legislature beginning in 2011, signed into law by Governor Scott Walker at the time. And for the next 13 years, they barely moved. And that is because they were drawn in such a way to make sure that the Republicans that drew them would never lose power, and that they drew district lines so that even if there was a statewide wave election by the Democrats, they would lose hardly any and often in zero legislative seats. And as I mentioned, amongst the most gerrymandered in the country. That changed in December of last year when the new Wisconsin Supreme Court struck down the maps that had been submitted and rewritten by the Republicans in 2021, 2022. As being unconstitutional, and ordered new maps to be presented to the court for the 2024 elections. And the governor earlier this year in February signed into law, as you referenced, much fairer state legislative district maps that more accurately reflect the purple state that Wisconsin is. Which is to say that the maps that the governor signed into law, they were his own maps, by the way. They were passed by the legislature and put into place. They don't favor the Democrats. They certainly don't favor the Republicans. They don't favor either party. What they do is they create competitive districts so that that party, which has the better candidate and the better ideas, actually has a chance of winning the election rather than having the outcome preordained. So that's how we got to where we are now. But the maps that are in place now are what we call remedial maps. They're only in place until the next redistricting process, which occurs after the census in 2030. And then we'll have to redistrict again to account for the changes in population that occur every 10 years. And the process we have in place is a very flawed partisan process. And so what Common Cause and all the FAIR MAPS organizations and activists have done is they've challenged every state legislative candidate to pledge to support legislation next year in 2025 that will create a nonpartisan redistricting process for the future, not controlled by partisan legislators, not a process that will guarantee that one party or the other can control the legislature for years on end, but a nonpartisan process. And so thus far, we launched this pledge in early July. Here we are a month later, right before August 13th primary, 90 candidates for the legislature, 13 state Senate, 88 state assembly candidates have pledged their support for nonpartisan redistricting reform. That's huge. That shows that they're listening. There are a lot of people involved in this. And this is definitely going to be an issue, not only in these primaries, but in the November general election.
So let's just focus in a little bit. Why is nonpartisan redistricting needed? And what are you looking for in terms of what does it mean to say, I promise to support nonpartisan redistricting reforms in 2025? Break that down.
Well, because the current system that we have in place allows the legislature to draw the maps, and there are no guidelines, there are no parameters. It basically is, if you have the most votes, you can ram through the maps that you can muster the votes for. And in the case of the Republicans in 2011, and then again in 2021, they had the majority. And so they rammed through maps that favored them.
So
as we've discussed, oh, go ahead.
Let me just ask this though. What kind of, you said you have 90 state legislative candidates.
Yeah.
And you broke it down in the assembly and the Senate, and they're all, the August 13th is the first time we've actually are voting in the new maps, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So are the promises for nonpartisan a mix of Republicans and Democrats that have made the promise? How does that break down?
Well, sadly, it is not, because of the polarized environment in which Wisconsin currently finds itself. And so almost every one of the candidates that has pledged support for a nonpartisan system is a Democratic candidate. And that is, I think, largely because many of those candidates saw what happened during the last 13 years and realized that this process just cannot continue. The Republicans, unfortunately, I think probably received a directive of some sort: don't pledge anything unless I, Robin Voss, the Speaker, or I, Devin Lemieux, the Senate Majority Leader, have already approved of the map that you can support. So unfortunately, that is not the case. But it is an issue. And I think the fact that we have so many candidates are elevating that issue, that's a very positive thing.
Thank you, Jay Heck of Common Cause. This is Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. We are here, on Civic Media Network statewide, and we're having a blast. We're talking about the elections coming up on August 13th. Another item, though, that's hitting it is we have now, we're going to have drop boxes. What does Common Cause think of this whole, the ballot drop boxes being back?
Well, Mark, we were very, very much in favor of them when the Wisconsin Elections Commission put them into place in 2016, because they provide a means for people to be able to return their absentee ballot that will ensure that their ballot is actually picked up and counted in time, and that their voice is heard. And the thing that's remarkable about this whole issue is that Wisconsin was the only state outside of the Deep South, the Deep Red South, that prohibited 2 years ago the use of drop boxes. Every other state in the country, in the Northeast, all of the upper Midwest, including red states like Iowa, Indiana, and Ohio, allow the use of drop boxes to return absentee ballots. But the conservatives in Wisconsin decided that this would be a good way to make sure that many of the votes that people are trying to get back in time would not be counted. And so they eliminated the use of drop boxes. And so you had to either depend on the U.S. mail or on the kindness of a stranger to return your absentee ballot to the clerk on time. It was an outrageous decision 2 years ago. We were a party to a lawsuit to overthrow that bad decision. And the court on July 5th wisely decided to reinstate. This is not create. This is restore the use of drop boxes. Will it make a difference? I think so, because it will allow people who are disabled, people who live a long way from the election clerk, don't have a car, to be able to get their absentee ballot in on time and have their voice counted. That's important in a democracy. So it's a big deal.
And you know, I think the point you make is really an important one. The drop boxes have been used in Wisconsin by clerks running elections for a very long time. I mean, they were used routinely before 2016. So, I mean, this was, you know, they only became controversial after Trump lost. And you know, nobody had a problem with drop boxes before. Why do you think it became a controversy?
It became a controversy because there's a vocal minority in the Republican Party that casts a shadow on all kinds of voting. And although it's impossible to cast a fraudulent vote with a drop box, you know, you can't get an absentee ballot unless you've showed your photo ID, and it's not going to be counted unless it's processed correctly. But despite that fact, the election deniers and the conspiracy theorists raised this issue, and the conservatives on the court bought it. And wisely, though, on July 5th, it was overturned.
Thank you, Jay Heck of Common Cause. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. We are here every Saturday at 3 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network. Move in, Wisconsin forward, always forward. Hello, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. We are here every Saturday at 3 p.m. on Civic Media Radio Network. This is WAUK 540 AM 101.1 FM. Here in the heart of the purple state of Wisconsin, in Waukesha County, a purple county, I'm here with Jay Heck of Common Cause, and we're going to talk about a couple of items that happen to be on the ballot. We have these constitutional amendments. What is this all about, Jay?
I like the way you phrase that, Mark. They happen to be on the ballot, and that's kind of really the case. The legislature, the Republicans in the legislature, when they can't get something through the legislature and signed into law by the governor, and the governor says, no, that's wrong for the state. And, you know, as the governor of the entire state, I disagree with what you're trying to do. They've decided that, well, that's too bad. We're going to do it anyway. And so what they've decided to do with a number of issues is just simply bypass the governor and take what they couldn't get through the legislative process and put it in the form of a constitutional amendment question. phrase it in such a way that it's very difficult for people to really understand, but it sounds innocuous and harmless enough. And so it's on the ballot. They often don't get a lot of attention. But this is what I call, Mark, the last gasp of a gerrymandered legislature, because they realize their days of being able to get anything they want through the legislature are over now. And so they want to be able to still control and make law and not have the governor be a factor in it. So that's why they put these questions on the ballot. They had two questions on the April ballot, which both innocuously stated passed. Both were anti-democratic with a small d, anti-voter measures that were passed narrowly on the ballot. And now there's two on the ballot that would restrict the governor and give a tiny group of legislators enormous power to decide what to do with literally millions of dollars of federal funds for emergency situations. And it's a complete and absolute and utterly contemptible grab at power by the legislature to take away something that's been in place in Wisconsin really since the Great Depression, since the early 1930s, when the federal government bestowed some much needed funding in Wisconsin. By the way, progressive and Republican governors back then, there weren't Democrats, but the governor should have control over the spending of federal dollars, particularly emergency dollars, not the legislature. So that's what these two constitutional amendments do. One reiterates the legislature's ability to have control over appropriation of money. They do already, by the way, of all state money. The legislature has almost absolute power and control over state appropriations. But this constitutional amendment and the second question specifically says the federal money that comes into the state must be approved by the legislature before the governor can distribute it. And one can only imagine, Mark, a situation like the pandemic, when emergency money is needed to distribute around the state, and it would have to go through and be approved by a handful of very powerful legislators who may not even have the knowledge or the expertise to even understand what the money should be used for, and are elected by 67,000 people in an assembly district. That's the people that they want to be able to control and decide how federal money will be spent, over the judgment of a governor who's elected by the entire state, a majority of the entire state, to make those types of decisions. It's a very, very ill-informed, ill-advised question. And hopefully the voters will have the common sense to vote no on this.
So
both questions.
Well, you know, I voted early, so I've seen it.
Yeah.
The questions are in the back of my ballot. So it was like, how many people are going to miss it, number one. But I want to read question number two.
Good idea.
Because the question, folks, you're going to read it because you're going to vote August 13th if you haven't voted already. But the question number two, allocation of federal monies. Shall Section 35(2) of Article 4 of the Constitution be created to prohibit the governor from allocating any federal monies the governor accepts on behalf of the state without the approval of the legislature by joint resolution or as provided by legislative rule? Now, it's as clear as mud, right? I mean, you read the question, you're inclined to say, well, why would I disagree? And it's like a trick question, folks. It's a trick question. Vote no. Because if you look at it, the governor gets to accept it on behalf of everybody, right? All on behalf of all the people. But he can't exercise his power to emergency, you know, distribute it as needed quickly without the approval of this little group of people. It's just really, really hideous.
If I just might add, it's even more hideous if you consider that this money would then fall into the hands and be under the control of not only a small group of legislators, but a very small group called the Joint Committee on Finance. And the chair of the Joint Committee on Finance is a person from Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. Wonderful little town. Fred McMurray from My Three Sons was from there. I like the town. I go through it all the time. But this person who represents 67,000 votes would have as much power as the governor in deciding how emergency funds for any kind of emergency natural disaster or, you know, epidemic would be spent for the entire state. It's got to get this person's approval. That is an outrageous and potentially catastrophic development for the state of Wisconsin. And by the way, Wisconsin is one of the few states that invests so much power in the Joint Committee on Finance. Not many other states do that. And this would give them even more absolute power at the expense of not only the governor, but of the people of Wisconsin. It's an absolute no-brainer to vote no on both of these questions.
Folks, do not let this gerrymandered Republican majority that's going to be passed hijack our democracy, folks. You heard it from Jay Heck, Common Cause. Vote no on August 13th. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere show. Hey, folks. And Jay Heck, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
It up there. We need you. We need you desperately.
You as well. Thank you, Mark.
Hello, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere show. We are here every Saturday at 3 p.m. on your statewide civic media radio network. This is WAUK 540 AM 101.1 FM. We're right here in the middle of the purple state of Wisconsin, purple state of Waukesha. And I am delighted to have back Jody Habersinikin, candidate for Senate 8. Hello, Jody. How are you?
I'm good, Mark. Thank you for having me on the show tonight.
So, we've had a chance to meet. We've had a chance to talk before. Who are you and why are you running for Senate District 8?
I have a long time environmental attorney who's worked for years in the legislature working on statewide acts and legislation like the Great Lakes Compact, Wisconsin's puppy mill bill, groundwater legislation, and very much have been there at that time in Wisconsin when we didn't have that gerrymander. So legislators were working across the aisle and actually getting things done that moved Wisconsin forward. And of course, as we all know, the gerrymander set in 2011, and we have not been in that position to allow Wisconsin to keep up with our neighboring states. And so, in fact, we have fallen behind. So I know that I have the skills and the experience and most of all, the intention to put Wisconsin back on track and move us forward again.
So just generally, what's the geographic area of District 8?
Yeah, right now we have a very big and new opportunity under the maps. Before the new maps, we, Senate District 8, had a built-in, baked-in 12-point disadvantage to Republicans. Now, under these maps, we have about 50-50 fairer chance to be able to have representation for the first time in many years. The opponent that I am running against is Dewey Strobel, who, for example, has been operating as a legislator in a Republican district, which was former Senate District 20, that had a 70% Republican safe seat advantage. So he has never run against a Democrat. He has not had to work with Democrats. So this is one of the exciting opportunities of the maps that we will have an opportunity for representation in the district. Under the maps, it's the southern border of the district is Whitefish Bay, and it follows north along the lakeside all the way up to Port Washington. And then it moves and includes the entirety of Cedarburg and Grafton, Mequon, Thiensville, to Menominee Falls and Germantown, and the Milwaukee County communities, again, of Whitefish Bay, Fox Point, Bayside, River Hills, and Brown Deer.
So how's the campaign going? What's it looking like?
It's going really well. There's a lot of enthusiasm. We've gotten to the point where we are having many times a week meet and greets and events, which has been outstanding. And we have been canvassing at the doors and talking to voters where they are. And there is a lot of enthusiasm and just a thirst for change from what has been seen, and rightly so, is very divisive politics in Wisconsin. And we have a chance now to bring things back to the middle, a more moderate centrist place for our purple state and this undeniably purple district.
So, you know, this is sort of, I mean, your experience at this campaigning, do you sense a difference canvassing from door to door? I mean, is there a new energy, you know, because of the new maps, because of the national slates? I mean, what are you sensing then?
Absolutely. There was so much built up anticipation concerning the maps. So right out of the gates, there has been so many people interested in volunteering and helping with events, and our fundraising events have been hugely successful. And we have launched now into these meet and greets several a week, where it's just very organic people coming together in various communities around the district, one after another. Yesterday we had one in Port Washington and went straight to Germantown, for example. And that pattern is continuing day after day. So I'm meeting groups of people, anywhere from 15 to 50, and getting the word out and asking for volunteer engagement, for canvassing, for postcards, for calls, for texts. It is very much a community effort, and it feels awesome. It goes without saying that with Harris's announcement, it was like a switch went on. People were still very engaged in this campaign because of how important it is for Wisconsin, which I assume we will get to. But now with Harris at the top of the ticket, we just feel that there's going to be so much energy and enthusiasm that it's going to help us from the top to the bottom of the ticket. And I agree with that.
So let us talk about Wisconsin, right? Because, I mean, you're running in a new seat, with new maps where you can really, really make a difference. And how is healthcare and women's reproductive rights, how is that playing out?
It is a big deal. I can't think of a door that it doesn't come up at. It is really front and center. Even in this universe, if they call it the persuadable votes, we're not yet in the get out the vote at the doors. We're in the persuadable universe, where it's largely less consistent voters, moderate or swing folks, or there's many, many Republicans and Democrats that we're speaking to, if you can just get a gist for that. And without question, women's reproductive health care options and freedoms, it is the talking point. People very much get in their guts that the essence of freedom in America is that we each should be able to make the most important decisions in our lives for ourselves. And those are not decisions to be made by politicians, especially extremists like my opponent, Dewey Strobel, who is the epitome of a far-right legislator. And I assume we can walk through his points in terms of not just abortion, but contraception, IVF, postpartum care. He is as far right on all of those matters, which really people, it really, really sets them back and makes them take notice when they understand how different he would be at the top if it were versus me. And it would just be a very big difference. So if we want our freedoms and importantly, access to health care, people have to vote for me and not Dewey Strobel.
You know, I think it's really, really, it's crucially important. You know, this notion that, women for 50 years made these decisions with Roe and didn't have to worry about the Deweys of the world, right? I mean, they didn't have to worry about right-wing conservatives in government coming into your doctor's room with your doctor, into your home, and telling you what to do. Do you see a real, real energy from the people you're talking to?
Absolutely. And actually, what I'm also hearing from is a lot of stories from women and from couples and families about how they needed to have emergency abortions to save their own lives, their ability to have children in the future. I'm hearing from young families who are needing the help of fertility doctors and IVF to start their own families. I am hearing from folks who are very concerned about how his policies will affect them and their ability to stay in Wisconsin and have the health care that they need to be healthy throughout every stage of their life. So this hyper-focus on abortion really does ignore how interconnected healthcare is for all of us, and particularly for women as we move through these various chapters of our life. Bottom line, we need doctors to take care of us, and these type of abortion bans like we experienced in Wisconsin for 15 months really put us back and prevented doctors from being able to do their jobs for us.
This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. I'm honored and privileged to have with us today Jody Havers-Sinikin, running for the Senate 8th District in the new Fair Map era. She's facing a very, very right-wing Republican, a MAGA Republican. This is, this is not a Tommy Thompson kind of Republican or George Bush or Ronald Reagan type of Republican. We've talked about the importance of women's reproductive rights, but the IVF is that's a real family issue, right? I mean, it's not just women. It's right. Couples want to have children, and they do not want the right wing stopping them. There are other issues that are teed up there. Labor, union rights. Yeah. Is that an issue? Do you see that from door to door?
I'm hearing it at certain doors. People understand that Dewey Strobel was one of the lead architects repealing prevailing wage, which really has hurt many, many Wisconsin businesses and contractors, multi-generational ones, who have lost their contracts for tax subsidized monies to out-of-state contractors who are paying folks far less and have less training and putting their workers in jeopardy and putting our state in a position that is far worse than it was before the repeal of the prevailing wage. So I am hearing that from folks. They understand that interconnection of being anti-union. Dewey Strobel, of course, was very much in favor of Act 10 and the attacks on public workers. In fact, he is still currently has been going after the retirement and pension savings of public workers like firemen, police, public schools, and other government workers, trying to raise the retirement age and make it more difficult for them after they have that retirement. So he has not stopped just with the unions themselves. He is continuing those attacks.
How do you see you being elected, supporting working family and retirees? What are you going to do?
What I am going to do is going to allow us as Wisconsin to move forward and start making possible solutions, including tax cuts that would be able to favor retirees and working young families. We need to keep both in Wisconsin and attract them. We cannot afford to have our retirees leaving Wisconsin, not just with their financial resources, but with their sense of community, leaving their families behind. And they are very much the powerhouse of so much of our volunteer work in our organizations and communities. Same with young families. As business owners, I can tell you, we need workers. We need a vital workforce. And to do so, we need an economy and a tax structure that encourages young people to move here and want to stay here.
You mentioned young people. Are you seeing youth energized in your campaign?
Yeah, it's really awesome. I'm getting a lot of volunteers, more people at the meet and greets, younger and younger. They sure as heck look younger and younger. So, I feel very uplifted by that. They're volunteering, they're showing up, and rightly so. As you well know, as an environmentalist, there are so many who are concerned about their future and climate change and the like.
We'll be right back with all that. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. This is Civic Media Radio Network. Paul Revere Show is here every Saturday at 3, keeping the state moving forward. More with Jody in a minute. Hello, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. This is WAUK 540 AM 101.1 FM Civic Media Radio Network. I'm honored and privileged to have with us Jody Havish-Sinikin. She is out there running to have democracy happen in the Senate District 8. A new district, a district where we're going to have fair elections. It's no longer super gerrymandered. And so we have a real, real fight going on. Jody has a history of being involved with the environment. How is that issue playing out in this race?
Interestingly, it's very much a local cause. Particularly in the Ozaukee County communities of Mequon, Cedarburg, Grafton, and Port Washington, because Dewey Strobel is a vice chair on the Joint Finance Committee, and a 10-year effort to fund the Cedar Gorge Clay Bluffs, 10 years in the making, it received the key funding from the Natural Resources Board that was then blocked by an anonymous objection. And Dewey Strobel, whether or not he was the anonymous objector, we don't know. But as reported in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and other publications, his office had no response. And importantly, in his role on the Joint Finance Committee, never initiated what was required, which was to call a hearing to see what that anonymous objector had to say about that funding for this long-awaited, very popular project, and no hearing was ever called. The project was in jeopardy of not being able to proceed and going to McMansions and a private vineyard type scenario. Luckily, Governor Evers came in with the missing money and was able to save it. And it is a gorgeous beloved piece of property just north of Lion's Den. If any of your listeners are aware of that, it's going to be connected with Lion's Den through the beach access, and it is big and beautiful. And people are really sore about it in those communities because they understood that Dewey Strobel was not transparent about his dealings with that project and certainly did nothing to advocate for the wishes of folks who, by the way, very much equally Republican and Democrats are involved in that long awaited effort. It was led by the Ozaukee Washington Land Trust, a nonpartisan group. So boy, at the doors, I hear a lot about Cedar Gorge Clay Bluffs, which is an issue there. Dewey Strobel also has earned an 11% from the conservation voters, which is an F grade. And what I also hear a lot of folks understanding is that on the Joint Finance Committee, he has been very much committed to blocking funding of $125 million for PFAS, which are these forever chemicals, which are impeding communities across Wisconsin's ability to drink water from their supplies for their community supplies, wash their babies literally in bottled water now for over a year. They have sat on that $125 million. So there are so many knocks against him from a conservation and environmental perspective, but those are some of the big ones that stand out in people's minds.
So, you know, you've been involved for a long time. I mean, you know, one of the strengths of Wisconsin and frankly, your district is, I mean, we're here on Lake Michigan with all this fresh water and such a resource. And it just astounds me that, you know, the far right has no interest in taking care of the resources. How do you see, what's your plan going forward on what would you like to do on the environmental front?
I very much want to return Wisconsin back to that ethic that you described, which is very, very part of our state's character on both sides, again, of the partisan divide. It has been long that way. This hijacking and these extreme positions has been very much one of the outgrowths of the gerrymander. So my vision, again, is to return to creating statewide coalitions in support of progress and science-based and ethical conservation for our lands and our public access, our wildlife, and of course for climate change remediation. We have a lot that we can accomplish there and strong will from the people to go there.
So you're active out here door to door. What are the other key issues? Is there one or two other key issues that are really hot that make a difference?
One of the ones I'm hearing about because of his extremism is childcare. Dewey Strobel is extremely opposed to childcare facilities, and more importantly, funding them through childcare counts and other efforts. Perhaps he and others might see this as a woman's issue or as a family issue, but it is very much a workforce issue. This program is due to end in less than a year. And when that fiscal cliff approaches, there are going to be up to a third of all the daycare centers in the state will close. And that is going to put not just workers and families, but employers and businesses across the state in serious jeopardy. So it's a big deal. And again, his ideological positions, so extreme and out of touch, even include childcare, which is essential to our economy as a state.
Well, to any civilized country, frankly. I mean, you know, if you believe in families and you believe in democracy, you got to have childcare. So is democracy an issue out there? Are people concerned about, you know, the what's happening in Madison?
I think they're concerned about the divisiveness and the extremism that we are not working together anymore. People get that there is a lockdown or a logjam of progress. I very much have seen that and heard that. It makes people feel a bit hopeless. And what I try to convey to them is to be positive, that with the maps, we have a change And with this Senate seat, what's so important is that it is the seat that will decide if the Democrats achieve a majority in 2026 or the Republicans do. It is the must-win seat for Wisconsin.
You heard it, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. You are listening to Jody Habersinikin. Vote, vote, vote. We got to save our democracy, folks. We got to save our state. We got to keep moving forward. Thank you so much, Jody. This is your Paul Revere Show here on Civic Media every week.